Welcome to Unreal Interviews with Dr. Paige Williams, the conversations that never actually happened but absolutely should have. In this series, I explore leadership, accountability, and high performance through the lens of some of the world's most legendary interviewers. But here's the twist. They're not actually here. Using AI, these conversations are inspired by their signature styles and reimagined to challenge how we think about what it really takes to lead well today. The hosts may be unreal, but the insights, well, they couldn't be more real. Let's dive in.
All right, Paige, I've heard you say that accountability is an act of love, and that really stopped me in my tracks the first time I heard it. Can you unpack what you mean by that?
Yeah, thanks so much. When I say accountability is an act of love, it's because in my experience, only people that care invite us into accountability. These are the people that care about the work that we're doing together and what we're capable of. So when I talk about accountability as an act of love, it's because I reckon it says, I see the greatness in you. I see the possibility in us. We can play a bigger game here, and I'm here to support you get there. So that's why, for me, accountability is an act of love.
I love that perspective. Now, before we dive into models or methods, let me ask you this. When did you first feel the power of accountability in your own life? Not as a leader, but as a human being.
I reckon I felt it from quite a young age. I've always been someone who has what psychologists call an internal locus of control. And what that means is that we believe that what we do makes a difference to our experience and our world. And so I've always had a sense of I am responsible for me, and what I do makes a difference in my world. And I guess as I went through school and as I grew up as the youngest child in the family, you know, I was the classic good girl and I took responsibility. I made my bed, I put my toys away. Look, I wasn't a perfect child, but I think I've always had quite a strong sense of autonomy and an internal locus of control in that I take care and I am responsible for my experience.
That's a powerful foundation. So there's often confusion between accountability, blame, and punishment. How do you define accountability in a way that's useful and humanizing?
Well, this is one of the really interesting things. In my research around accountability, but also as I've been a team leader, as I've led organizations, and as I've walked alongside teams and leaders doing this work, this idea of what do we mean by the words that we use is a really important foundation that we need to get right. So in my work, I distinguish between responsibility and accountability. And I do that in a way that's really useful in that responsibility is the doing. It's actually us kind of taking on tasks and the doing of what we need to do. But accountability is the delivering of that. And so we can do stuff and be busy, but never deliver what we need to or to the standards or to the time or whatever that might look like. But ultimately, whether we are doing or delivering, whether it's a responsibility or an accountability, it's always a choice. And this is one of the things that leaders sometimes find it very hard to get their heads around, and teams as well, is that we only ever call and invite people to accountability. It's ultimately an individual's choice whether they choose to pick that invitation up.
I love that distinction. Now, why do you think accountability so often gets weaponized in organizations, and what's the cost when it does?
I think accountability is so often the monster under the bed, and it's pulled out too late. It's reactive, and we're past the point where people can actually do something to kind of save the situation or make a difference. And because of that, very naturally, we move into defensive, where we're defending our actions, even though there's nothing we can do to change them now. And the consequence of that is that it basically shatters trust because people don't feel that they are being set up for success. They're not given a chance to do their best work. And when trust shatters, wow, well, you're really losing the foundation of high performance there. People start to play smaller and smaller games because they want to stay safe. And so performance goes down, innovation goes down, creativity goes down, and everything that we want in high performing teams and to create sustainable high performance in organizations, well, that just leaks out. So I reckon it so often gets weaponized in organizations because it's introduced too late in the game. And the cost when it does is trust and performance.
That's such a crucial point. So let's talk courage, because holding someone accountable or being held accountable can bring up all sorts of fear and shame. How do we make that safer?
Well, the thing about safety is things that feel safe are things that we feel kind of comfortable and that we feel are normal. So normalizing conversations around accountability, normalizing that there isn't an expectation that everything will go perfectly every time. So normalizing struggle and failure, talking about things that aren't going well as celebrating the things that are. You know, let's learn from both of those. But making people feel safer around accountability means that we have conversations about it that aren't punitive. It doesn't mean that if we're having an accountability conversation, someone's in trouble or something is wrong. We actually reset it completely. And that's how I talk about the work of accountability done right, is that we are fundamentally resetting accountability so that it becomes something that sets us up for success rather than something that punishes us too late in the game.
That's a great reframe. So you've got this beautiful phrase, accountability done right. What does done right look like in action, especially when the stakes are high or emotions are charged?
Yeah, it's been interesting. It's only in the last kind of 12 months or so that I've added the done right to accountability. I've been working with accountability for about 3 or 4 years now. But this idea of what does it look like when it's done right, I talk about that through the lens of what it's about having the right conversation at the right time with the right people about the right stuff and having that conversation in the right way. And the reason it's kind of done right is because what that looks like changes. It depends on the people and the circumstance and what it is we're talking about. So what done right looks like shifts, which is why leading accountability asks so much of us. Because it's not something that we just kind of tick a box and it's done. It's not something that's one and done. It's something that we need to actively work at and be aware of and have strategies that mean we can adjust to meet the situation so that we can do it right to get the best outcome out of what's going on. So it's a really emergent quality. Accountability done right isn't just one size fits all. It's what we assess needs to be done in order to create the best outcome in what we're facing down in this moment.
I love that adaptive approach. In your work with leaders, where do you see the biggest accountability blind spots?
Oh, this is actually what's quite funny. Many leaders, as they go through my programs, realize that actually it's with them that their blind spots are kind of most severe, because it does start with us, with each of us, in terms of owning what's ours to own. And that's a key question in the work that I do with leaders is, well, what's yours to own? And what's an accountability leader's piece to own is to be clear about what the expectations are they're inviting others into. So if we're not clear on expectations as people who are inviting accountability from others, well, I don't reckon we're ready to have that conversation yet. Because if we can't clearly articulate it and then be able to check on understanding, then we're not setting people up for success. We've got kind of a fog of confusion in the picture before we've even moved to action in any way at all. So often the biggest blind spot is that leaders realize that actually they were assuming so much, or they thought that people understood what they'd said. They didn't kind of check for understanding. And just changing that one thing and getting clarity around expectations and checking for understanding in how they've communicated with them can fundamentally shift accountability and a feeling of confidence in a team.
Such a valuable insight. So how do you help leaders build cultures where people are both held and supported, where there's high care and high standards?
Yeah, this is what's so interesting about accountability as kind of work in organizations, is that it's big work. Accountability done right is deeply human. It's a deeply human endeavor, and it asks us to be bigger leaders, to hold a bigger space for ourselves and for others, and in a way to be better humans, because there is so much about accountability that can be very, very triggering. And yet actually, if we put at the center of what we're looking to achieve the work that we're doing together, whether that is a task or a project, or whether it's the culture that we're looking to create in our team or organization, and that's the work that we're focusing on, then what that asks of us is to go, okay, it's not about me and you. It's not you versus me or me versus you. It's about us understanding what is the work we need to do here, and how can we be in service of it. So that's what the high care, high standards is about. It's about us holding a bigger space for ourselves and others in order to get the work done that needs to be done.
That's a beautiful perspective. Now, I want to go back to love, because if I'm honest, love isn't a word most people connect with performance conversations or feedback, but you say it's essential. How do you coach leaders to bring love into accountability without losing rigor or clarity?
So I have this approach called assuming positive intent. And what that means is that as we go into an accountability conversation, or we're first talking about setting up accountability, we assume that everyone engaged in that conversation is there to do the best work that they can and to achieve the best outcomes that we can together. So we are assuming that they have positive intent towards what we're working on together. Now, the reason this is helpful and the reason this is kind of how we come back to love is that this bigger type of love, this agape love, means that we are seeing the best version of everyone involved in the accountability that we're asking of them. And we hold this space for them until there is evidence to show us otherwise. And this is useful for us as people kind of leading accountability, because we're not then playing a second guessing game as we are in meetings or conversations and kind of jumping to conclusions that they're not fully on board or that we think they're thinking this. We go, no, I am going to assume that they are absolutely here to show up and do the best work they can until I have evidence to the otherwise. And then as soon as we have that evidence, without jumping to conclusions, with it being really clear and undeniable evidence, then we have the accountability conversation about what needs to change or how they need to show up differently in service of the work that we're doing together. So this idea of bringing love into accountability is we assume positive intent until it becomes clear that that's not what's going on. And then we have a very clear and direct accountability conversation about what needs to happen next.
That's a powerful way to approach it. So can you share a moment where someone held you accountable in a way that changed you? Not just your behavior, but maybe how you see yourself.
This is a really interesting question, because I've always been someone who has been able to do a lot. Like, I have quite a high capacity to, you know, if you like, tick things off my to-do list. And so I've realized, and I've had that from quite a young age, probably more of that good girl syndrome. I realized that part of my identity became very wrapped up in that, how I felt okay in the world was through the output that I had. So, you know, I'm a PhD, I've done multiple research projects, I've written multiple books. So there's a lot of kind of output that makes me feel kind of okay about who I am. But when I met my life partner, Matthew, he was someone who had done, you know, equivalent work and put beautiful things out into the world. And so that really wasn't part of what he saw in me. I didn't need to do anything to be loved and to be welcomed and to be someone who was held to be enough just as I was without having to have anything more than that. And so it was a fundamental shift for me in terms of understanding what it meant to be me without having to do anything.
That's a profound realization. Now, you've created some brilliant frameworks, like the 5-star meetings, the 5-star scorecard, and levels of accountability maturity. Can we talk through one or two of those and how they help operationalize accountability in teams?
Yeah, this understanding of accountability and maturity is a really useful thing for both leaders and teams to see that it's not just black and white. There really is a journey in terms of how people and teams move through accountability. So if we look at kind of the lower levels, that's where accountability is avoided. No one really takes ownership. There can be a lot of finger pointing. Missed deadlines are common at this kind of level. We then might move up to a compliant level where, okay, yep, we're doing what we're asked to do, but very little more. And then as we move up through the levels, we move through where team members own what's theirs to own. They take responsibility, but it's still really depends on leaders initiating that, moving through to level four, where it's more embedded because it's a team-wide practice and peer-to-peer accountability is present. And then level five accountability is where it's elevated. And this is where it flows between teams, departments, through leadership levels, and really is part of the cultural DNA of an organization or a division. And what's really interesting is that the type of meetings, the type of frameworks and tools that you need changes at each level. So to move from level one to level two needs a fundamentally different set of tools and frameworks than moving from level four to level five. And yet consistently through that, things like meetings that matter, having conversations that count are really the lifeblood of accountability. Because if we're not coming together to see how things are going and to provide support through meetings, if we're not having conversations that count both in those meetings and between those formal meeting times, well, then we're not creating a space for accountability to flow. So it's a very interesting thing to think about. What are the frameworks and tools that a team or an individual might need as they move through different levels of maturity?
That's fascinating. If a leader is listening right now, thinking, I know our accountability is off, but I don't know where to start, what would you tell them?
I'd say get back to basics. Let's clear the fog of confusion. And first and foremost, you get clear on what it is you are asking of others. What are your expectations? And I teach something that called the 6 W's framework: who, what, when, how, where, why. And I say to leaders, if you can't answer those questions to the best of your ability, you're not ready to have a conversation with others yet. So get clear, because once we can communicate that clarity, we are building confidence in and with our people, and that creates a sense of safety.
That's a solid foundation. We always end with a reflection. So fill in the blank for me. To do accountability well, you have to be willing to...
I reckon it's hold a bigger space. Hold a bigger space for yourself and for others, because this work isn't always easy and we need space to bump around in it sometimes.
I love that. And final question, what gives you hope that we can do accountability differently and better as humans and as leaders?
Well, I know that there's a deep need in each of us to feel seen, valued, and known. And accountability done right meets all of those needs. So I have a very genuine hope that actually this brings out the truest and the best in each of us.
That's a beautiful note to end on. Thank you, Paige, for sharing your insights and experiences with us today.